It's another Friday, and that means it is the 55th edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. Jeremy and I, you know us by now, take a look at the news of the week. We have a poll this week.
That's our news.
Our news, John Zogby Strategies. Interesting poll. And before I jump into it, I just want to tell folks you've been kind to us and liking this report, telling us that we're doing something different, which is that it's low-key and nonpartisan and a lack of yelling. And so if you like it, please indicate so. Please retweet it. Please share it with others. Please, let's get the word out about it. But I'm going to take a look at the political stuff, because I think there's some very interesting developments here. And then you, in turn, are going to, and I don't mean this facetiously, you're going to look at the important stuff, because we like to get underneath the fingernails a little bit into the heart and soul of folks.
Which also happens to be political, what I'm going to cover.
Okay. All right. Then,
so we both got it, but from different angles. So.
And that's what we mean when we say real and unscripted.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, you know, we tested a few of the, you know, the hot button political questions. And so just so that everybody knows, we did this January 29th, yes. 841 likely voters, margin of sampling error plus or minus 3.5. And we found that 9-10 days into his presidency, Joe Biden has a 56% approval rating, a 36% disapproval rating, and then, not surprisingly for a new presidency, 8% not sure. Before I get into the kind of like the innards of the poll, that's good. We haven't seen very many 56s in a while. That includes Barack Obama, for that matter, and George W. Bush, once the sheen of 9/11 and then the bump, you know, from the early Iraq war. And so what it tells me is that Biden was elected with 51% of the vote. He's built a governing majority. You know, 56 is good. It's persuasive. It means to a great degree he's held on to the groups that helped him get elected. But as I'm going to share in a minute or so, by being a moderate and reaching across the aisle and taking advantage of both the unpopularity of his predecessor and the disarray that's going on right now within GOP circles, that Biden's been able to take advantage and win some Republican support. So let me go through some of these numbers. 56-36 overall. Among voters under 50, 18 to 29 and 30 to 49, Biden gets a 61% share of approval. Those are numbers that he's held on to. That's what he was elected among young people with that share, 61%. Fades a little bit among 50 to 64-year-olds, but when we get to that all-important group of seniors, 65-plus, now remember, they were bedrock supporters of Donald Trump. Biden, who lost that group in November, now gets a 55% approval rating among older voters. Holds on to liberals, very progressive. The numbers are 77-87% among those on the left. But this is what fascinates me. He gets a 69% approval among moderates. That's the stuff of which a solid foundation can be built. But when I look at conservatives and very conservatives, he's getting 30% among both. Barack Obama never got numbers like that. Bill Clinton never got numbers like that. He's held on to Hispanics. In fact, 71% of Hispanics give him a positive job approval, and 73% of blacks, 18% of blacks disapprove. 30% of Republicans, so we had conservatives, 30% of Republicans give him a positive rating, and then otherwise he's held on. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, to go back to what you said about the the 30% of conservatives and very conservatives, right? And then the older crowd, mm-hmm. the people older than 65 that had a boost, I mean, that's got to be because of January 7th, mm-hmm. right? And the aftermath of that and the disappointment with the event and then with the Republican Party in general. And so that's now, and that's what we see. And then if my memory serves me well, on the low end, Rasmussen, I think, has Biden at 49 or 50. Mm-hmm. And then on the high end, I can't remember specifically who, they have it closer to 60. So we fall in the middle.
We fall in the middle.
Which is probably why it's more accurate, right? Because it's not partisan, because Rasmussen is partisan, and you know the other one that had the higher end are partisan. So that's now, and those are good numbers, but I'm looking to, as well as you, what happens in the future. As you've alluded, this is the honeymoon, mm-hmm. right, that a president typically gets in the first, I don't know, month, 100 days, and so we see now with these numbers, there's the honeymoon. But what comes next?
And there's a lot of things going on right now that are in Biden's favor. Aside from the fact that he's got a majority, you've got some real disarray on the other side. Republicans, instead of a united front right now, are worried about the impact of Marjorie Greene and some of the other members of Congress who have let some of their anti-Semitic conspiracy theories not only spew out, but more importantly, take time, divert time away from Republican leadership dealing with COVID-19. Right now, Biden is being viewed at as someone who is attacking those issues, dealing with those issues. Republican leadership is too, but they're the ones whose attention is being diverted. Also, the question of bona fide conservative Liz Cheney, they had to take time away from whether or not to remove her from her leadership position. She won that vote, but I'm mindful that 61% of her colleagues voted against her. So that means that Republicans have some internal healing. Meanwhile, Biden is exercising some options. And bottom line is, and I don't feel this way, but I'm reading more and more, Americans care a whole lot more about the possible $1,400 check and the possible spread of the distribution of the vaccine mm-hmm. than they do about intra-party mm-hmm. squabbles. So I think Biden has a wind at his sail. There are two more results that I want to share. We asked straight out, should former President Donald Trump be convicted or not? And 49% said that he should be convicted. 41% said that he shouldn't be convicted. Typical breakdown, younger voters, a majority. Among 18 to 29-year-olds, only 28% said that he should not be convicted. 54, yes, 28, no. Same with 30 to 49-year-olds, 54% convict, 36 against. Then you start to get sentiment against conviction with older voters. Moderates, 57 to 31 convict. But conservative, very conservative, 28% convict, 21% convict. Very conservative, 18% among Republicans as a whole. That is not a united front among Republicans. And I think you're starting to see, as we enter now next week, the trial, perhaps not a united front, perhaps not enough to convict the president, but enough to show some disarray continued among Republicans. Final result, unless you want to comment on that.
Please continue.
What about a redo of the 2020 election? Now, remember, it was the final results were 51 to just about 47. If the election were held again, it would be 50 for Biden, but 33 for Trump. Biden not moving, but Trump actually going down 13 points. Mm-hmm. 11% said other. We typically get that. And 6% not sure. If not a ringing endorsement of Biden, at least a ringing non-endorsement of Trump. He's, because as you point out, of January 6th and the aftermath, there's been some damage done to the Trump cult.
Yeah. Yeah, the disarray, as you put it, in the GOP is visible, and then the numbers confirm it. I wonder myself, although the numbers show unity in the Democratic Party, I wonder down the road, the immediate thing that I wonder about is Tulsi Gabbard. I mean, right now, and you know, going back to the leading up to the 2020 election, Tulsi had the potential to be a force. Remember during the debates, I mean, people just started Googling her name. Her name exploded because of her exchanges with Kamala Harris. If you look in the long run, she's the successor to Bernie and Bernie's movement. And so that progressive populist wing is still very real in the Democratic Party. It's probably put on a hold right now, but where she's really emerging is she's potentially, well, I don't want to say the lone voice, but you know, the very minority voice among those Democrats telling Joe Biden and the administration, do not go forward with the domestic terrorism. This is an exact repeat of what happened after 9/11 and how ethnic groups and Muslims, Middle Eastern cultures were targeted unfairly. And so to me, I'm looking to see if that's going to gain speed in the long run. I don't think so in the short term, but if that eventually starts to show some cracks, as you know, maybe Biden in the future starts to disappoint. I mean, every president starts to disappoint their party at some point, but there's a bigger thing here. This is what my numbers are about. I talked last week about the tale of two populisms. And the fact that in American history we have this very unique moment in the present where you have two populist movements. It happened last decade. It's culminated leading up to the 2020 election. It seems to be like maybe it's dormant right now because there's the honeymoon. Biden won. The election is over. But that's what the intelligence here, the 13th issue, is going to be about. It's called a latent force with a question mark. And so I start off with the basic question. Do your political values align more with the establishment wing or the populist wing in your party or your ideology? And overall, 32% say establishment, 19% say populist, and 49% say they're not sure. So half say they don't know where they stand. You break it down by party, and you get a similar breakdown here. Democrats, 40% establishment, 15% populist, 45% not sure. I'm just going to look at the Republicans for sake of time here. 35% of Republicans say establishment, 21% say populist, and 44% say that they're not sure. So that's just flat out asking them on labeling themselves, how they identify. And we have a huge batch who say they don't know. But when we start getting into issues, the story changes. And so I'm going to go over one, then I'll turn it over to you. But foreign policy. On foreign policy, do you believe it is better for the U.S. government to, on the one hand, invest more heavily in military to enhance strategic positions? That is the classic establishment language and standpoint, right? Versus the U.S. government taking the lead, the leading role in peace by ending U.S. wars. And so the overall results show 30% going with the more establishment, invest more heavily, focus on those strategic positions around the globe, essentially to maintain U.S. Strength. 53% say end the wars, take a leading role. And so we go back to flat out asking them where they stand. And a core came out in favor of saying, well, I'm populist on both sides of the aisle. But so many didn't know. But when we got into this issue of war, it was clearly in favor of the anti-war, the pro-peace, the anti-establishment, the pro-populist standpoint.
All right, so two things. Let me go back to Tulsi Gabbard. Yeah. Very appealing political persona, and quite possibly a future. Not now. I don't see her as a factor at all, simply because there was a term in Congress, just one term. Remember, Bernie has been out there for 45 years and took a long time to congeal that left. What Bernie has is not something that Tulsi Gabbard is in a position right now to exploit, and that is Bernie has not only the Bernie supporters, but even more so a network of local activists and communities all over this country that can be mobilized electorally, mobilized over local issues, and that movement is strong and potent, and I don't think it's connected to former Congresswoman Gabbard in any way. And so watch her maybe later down the road, but she doesn't have the persona just yet. In terms of the position anti-war, remember, since Vietnam, there's been tremendous skepticism about going to war. And it's Vietnam syndrome, in fact. And if you'll recall, because we talked about this way back when, we were doing daily tracking of U.S. sentiment leading up to the war in Iraq. And it was half and half. Half ready to go to war in Iraq, half firmly opposed to it, and stayed that way until a day before. Literally a day before, in March of 2003. And then as it became clear that the bombing, the shock and awe were going to begin, the troops were mobilized, then the tide turned and Americans rally around the troops. We're in a situation right now where I'm not doubting the anti-war sentiment. Or the post-Vietnam, post-Iraq sentiment that exists. But presidents do have the capacity to go before the American public and build a case. They do have, I'm not going to say control, but management of the media, and the media feeling just broadly in general, some skeptics, but by and large, they can't be seen as unpatriotic. My point is that that anti-war sentiment can change just like that if the perception is that American interests in some way are being jeopardized.
Yeah.
And so I'm not doubting the results of that, but I am saying that it's a very potent force on the other side that can lead us into war.
It is, but I still think that it's worthy of mentioning because Unfortunately, you're not going to get this on tonight's news or tomorrow's news, but 60% of Democrats agreed with the ending wars, 42% of Republicans, and 64% of independents. I mean, that's a broad base. That's a huge coalition. But that's just on foreign policy. I've got numbers here on the environment of develop versus preserve nature. I'm going to save that for the intelligence here. Please read it. Please see issue 13 on our website. I've got a whole host of issues. Personal data. On personal data stored by corporations and government agencies. Do you believe that the corporations and the government agencies do more good with this personal data, the collection of it, or do you think that they do more harm? Here's the breakdown. Actually, I'm going to save that one for the intelligence here.
I haven't seen it, so tell me. Don't listen out there.
I'd rather go to the economy.
All right.
So regarding the economy overall, do you believe Wall Street generally, because this is, you know, this is the hot topic as of the last week, at which we talked about, does Wall Street create stability or does it create instability? Overall, 38% say it creates stability. 37% say it creates instability. 25% are not sure. Mm. But when we break it down by party, 36% of Democrats say stability. 37% of Democrats say instability. On the Republican side, it's 52% that say stability. But 29%, almost a third, say instability. For independents, 30% stability, 48%. So that's kind of like close to what we saw with foreign policy. And so, I mean, on some major issues here, foreign policy, you know, who's to blame basically on the economy is in whether we have a good economy or we have a bad economy. We're seeing some potential for a broad coalition. I'm not saying that this is going to be, you know, the beginning of a political realignment, but these are the kind of numbers that could lead to that down the road. And I'll just stop right there.
There is a populist sentiment, and there is area, just as there is among establishment, to coalesce, as you see moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats. There is, it has always, I think, been the potential for populists and populist agreement on right and left. At the moment, as always, actually, race and racism get in the way of any of that. But there is a strong populist tendency, and it's in many ways risen to the fore. Mm-hmm. Now, my final comment will be Republicans are in disarray, and it's going to be difficult for them, I think, to heal the wounds, especially if Donald Trump is, you know, no longer a factor, you know, in some ways using his popularity to have the party coalesce around him. But by the same token, you're right. The Democrats are only moments away from disarray. That's why these 100-day periods for new presidents are very important. This is when they get things done. And there's a historical chart that I saw reminding me of this century, or last century, I should say, last going back to 1900. Of when presidents actually got things done. And generally, if not the first 100 days, it was the first year, and then that's it. Hmm. So, what are we telling people? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want to tell people just a little bit more.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Because, I mean, this is the big question here, because we build it up. And what I wanted to know, And this really gets to the heart of whether there's a burgeoning or potential populist movement going into this decade, is on the economy, should more power be granted to the federal government, basically to deal and steer us through, Or should power be taken away from the federal government and given more to the community level? And so I'm just going to go over the overall, but I can assure you that the party breakdown is fascinating. But overall, 22% say give greater powers to the federal government. 58% say basically decentralize it to the community level. That is absolutely huge. But, you know, I mean, in exploring any potential realignment and any potential broad-based coalition building beyond that transcends ideology and party, you have to figure out, well, what are they eventually going to butt heads over? Now you said, you know, what can really stop that is race and racism. Mm-hmm. I think it's more the fundamental question over really what we call the American experiment, right? I think that at the highest level view, looking at American history, philosophically, the divide has always been basically over what I'm going to define it as natural rights versus human rights. And so we asked that question. What do your viewpoint of rights, where do you stand more? Natural rights or human rights? And I give a very neat little, you know, definition of both. Overall, 44% side with natural rights, 43% side with human rights. So,
okay. Yeah, that's us. That's interesting. So when's the intelligentsia come out?
I'm writing it today, and I'm sending it out tomorrow, and people can be able to read it tomorrow.
Okay, and then we'll be sending out a notice when it comes out.
Yes, we'll send it out on our email blast. If you're not on our email blast, please contact me, Jeremy@johnsogbystrategies.com. Or if you don't do that, just make sure you go to the website, www.johnsogbystrategies.com, and look for the intelligentsia button. They're all free. There's 13 issues right there.
So we want people to like, to retweet, to share, to call their friends, to have group parties, but socially distance. But we want to generate some buzz. Okay. Good poll.
Yeah, that sounds
right.
Good.
All right. Have a good week, and we'll see you at number 56.
Looking forward to it.